Happy Thursday, Jules, because guess what? The Premier League voting unanimously 20-0 to come back to full contact training, which means we're one step closer.
We're getting close
to actually restarting. Now, there's a whole bunch of issues. We're not going to go into them. But it was an important next step. Now the ball, I think, is in the politicians' court. The testing results also, broadly speaking,
very
positive.
Good, yeah.
You know, you had 4 positive tests out of many. I don't even remember them. I think it was more than 1,000 this round.
Yeah, yeah.
Still not 100% clear how people can test negative and then test positive a week later. I guess they go infect themselves. But, you know, there is positive momentum. And it's looking good. Even Troy Deeney has said, well, I'm kind of reassured now with my conversation. So I'm the captain. It's my responsibility. I'll be back. So we're going to be talking a little bit about that, but we're super excited because we have Thomas Delaney on, Borussia Dortmund midfielder. And obviously we'll be talking a little bit of Serie A, big meeting today, and quick hits and the T team. And of course, the fact that Bayern look headed to their 8th Bundesliga title. Let's start Premier League. We've heard from Dini. We've had the vote. Now they're talking about. I just want to get your view on this, though. They're talking about the rebate that the Premier League are going to pay to the broadcasters, and it looks like it's about half the amount. It's about £350 million, and because of the way the money's allocated, it's going to disproportionately hit the wealthier clubs. Is it right, or should they try to hang on to that money?
Yeah, it's a very interesting one, and you can imagine a quite heated debate, I think, today via, you know, video conference and stuff like that. Basically, right holders, Sky and BT here in the UK, but also some of the international broadcasters are saying, hang on, if the games are all behind closed doors, you know, the product that we will sell is not the same, so we need some of that money back because we paid that enormous amount of money for a product that is not there, which is in a way true. So you can understand their side of things.
It's a bit disingenuous too, because
yeah, it is a bit.
You could go back and say, oh yeah, sure, but you also have a bunch of people stuck at home because they can't go outside because of the virus. What are they going to do? They'll be watching your games.
Yeah, true. But you can also see why they're trying to, you know, to put a bit of pressure on that point. They're also hoping, both of them, to have more games to broadcast. So right now there's 92 games left. I think it's 47 between Sky and BT. They're hoping for maybe 45 more that they can show. And in that case, that would also mean more money for them to spend to go and broadcast those games. So, extra expenses and things like that. So maybe they want to recoup a bit of the money in that way. I don't know. For the club point of view, as you said, you know, it could be a disaster. You could have to pay back £30 million for some of them, 10 or 15 million for other clubs who right now probably don't have that kind of money to give back to broadcasters. So I think it's a key meeting. I think, I don't know what you think, but they surely can find a middle ground somewhere where maybe they don't have to pay that money back, but find an agreement even over next season because
over the next couple of seasons. Huge meeting today in Italy. It looks like it's all systems go, like they finally have an understanding for a restart, which would be on June 12th. Clubs back in full training, of course. So that looks to be on its way. The tricky thing in Italy, I mean, as I told you on Monday, of course, they have a plan B of the playoffs, but also just that there's a lot more games to fit in there because you've got more rounds left to play. So we'll see how that unwinds. I think it's more important there to really start earlier. Otherwise, you know, you're starting next season in October at this stage, the way things are going.
And for Spain, I mean, we talked about, there's nothing new, but for the people who haven't seen it, there's a video that Barcelona put out of a little bit of training with Leo Messi defending, attacking, creating, scoring. And if you thought that maybe some of the players would come back and would need a bit of that, well, he looks ready for sure.
We're going to talk to Thomas Delaney in a minute. Just wanted to get your thoughts first on the game in terms of, I mean, I wrote this on the website. What struck me about Bayern, I know it's a cliche, but they really are unflappable, and they're also so versatile. You know, in that first half, yeah, both teams had chances, but, you know, don't forget, Bayern, yeah, I thought the first half was pretty level. And then Bayern just made some adjustments in the second half. And, you know, in the second half, when you expected Dortmund to be throwing the kitchen sink at them to get back in the game, I thought Bayern were really never in danger except for the VAR incident.
Yeah, the penalty, you're right, and that could have changed, or maybe not, the game. I just think that once they go 1-0 up, this Bayern side, I think there is no way, unless you are super, super good and efficient, that you can come back in the game, and that's exactly what happened. I thought the first half was one of the best half of football I've seen this season. Really, it was. And despite the fact that there was no fans and that they're just coming back out of 2 months without playing, I thought the intensity was amazing. I thought everything was amazing. I love the way Dortmund played and how they beat the press. And
really? Because, yeah, they beat the press. But I thought conspicuously absent in this game was Julian Brandt, who was so good. Once you get in the final third, you know, ultimately, you're still going to need some quality to go and set up the chance for somebody. And it has to be Julian Brandt because, you know, Torgan Hazard, love him to death. It's not going to be him who provides it. Yeah. Haaland is there to receive the ball and score, so it ain't going to be him. You know, your midfielders, you know, maybe Guerrero.
Yeah, it was like, Hakimi
coming forward. Possibly. But, again, by playing Gnabry and Coleman the way they did, those guys were pinned back the whole time because they knew that any clearance, you know, would create huge problems for Dortmund's wingbacks.
True, although I thought Hakimi had some good positions in the first half, especially where they used that right-hand side really well again because they knew that Gnabry was not going to defend massively. So there was a few times where you had a 2v1, exactly like we explained on Monday, when Alphonso Davies was one against Hakimi and Hazard or Hakimi and Brandt. And I think there's a few times, I don't know if you, but where you watch Dortmund and they went all the way to the last 30 yards and then it was all about the final ball and many, many times they messed that up. The cross was not good enough. They passed a couple of you know, extra touches or extra passes that they didn't really need. They didn't shoot enough, I thought. And you were like, well, they got there so easily in a way. And then the last pass or the last touch was not good enough. And you can't do that against Bayern because one moment of absolute genius from Kimmich where Brocky should have done better, but still the whole thing was great. And what I loved about that goal, and hopefully we will ask Delaney as well, is that after the game, Kimmich says, we knew how Berkey played and we know that Berkey always plays a couple of yards ahead of his line. So I knew that he would be just that extra space between him and the line, and if I chip it well, it would go in. And I think Thomas Müller refers it as well in an interview after the game.
So that's why Kimmich doesn't even look up. Because I thought, exactly. What is he? Does he have like, you know, is he like a bat where he's got like weird radar to know where Berkey was? I'm gonna ask Delaney about that because, you know, I don't know if Thomas remembers or if he's too modest, but he scored a very similar last minute winner like that for Copenhagen in a big game against Brøndby.
Yeah.
Think back. Well, many years ago when he was still in Denmark. It's on YouTube. But you know what? Well, I'm sure people would rather hear from us than Thomas Delaney. Let's bring him on and see what's up. Thomas, welcome aboard. I just made this joke before starting to record, but a lot of people have noticed, and talk about the important stuff first, a lot of people have noticed that your hair is a little bit out of control, shall we say, in lockdown. So to make you feel more comfortable, I'm going to remove my hat because my hair is an absolute mess too. I'm guessing you didn't trust yourself to give yourself your own haircut with some clippers or anything, or go fully shaven headed. Not for you, no. The Gravesen look, no.
No. Every summer it's the same question. I'm like, I'm gonna shave, like go real short, but I don't know, I'm afraid it won't grow out or something. I'm a bit superstitious about that. I know it's irrational, but it's still in behind of my head that maybe the curls won't come out or the hair won't come out, so I never dared.
Alright, from a happy note to Tuesday night, obviously, it certainly felt like the whole world was watching this game. And yet, I just want to get from you inside the stadium, not your first game behind closed doors, but the fact that it was Bayern, did it feel different?
Sure, it does feel different. But in the last three games now, I feel like that whenever you get going, and the adrenaline starts to kick in, you don't notice the surroundings. And that's the same, even when we play with 80,000 spectators, it's, you go in a bubble, and it's kind of the same here, but there will be moments where it's more like a friendly game in the context of how you can speak to each other. And it will never hit the same stress level, I guess, because there's not this pressure from outside, but it's actually decent.
You've had two more days now since Tuesday, pretty much almost 2 days. What did you make of that game? Now that you've got a bit of hindsight into it, now that you maybe thought about it, maybe watched a bit of it, some videos, what did you make of it? And what was the most impressive is how efficient they are, because I thought you started the game really well and you played really well in that first half, and then Kimmich scores that goal and then the game changes. But they seem to be so solid mentally, even when they're not playing well, even when the other team is better than them, they just don't concede, or they still create chances. And is how hard is it to play against them?
It's difficult. You have to give respect to what Bayern are doing. Without comparing my time in Copenhagen and the Danish league to Bundesliga or Bayern, it's kind of what we did in Copenhagen. We had many championships in a row, and it's just the feeling of a team that even when they don't play good, they still win, and they know they're gonna win. And we as a club and team lack that, because that only comes from winning. And of course, Bayern is now, they have, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think seven championships in a row. Yeah, you know, that creates a mentality and a culture that just creates a crazy strong fundament for every game.
Still early in the game, in that first half, there were chances at either end. Did you feel that maybe if Alfonso Davies were a little bit less quick in recovering on Haaland, or maybe a bit more, like if you guys had broken through first, do you get the sense with Bayern that might have allowed you to perhaps push on more? Or do you think that Bayern are just so like a machine, so with that mentality, that they would have just ground on forwards and found a way to win? Because that is the impression that they give off.
Yeah, sure, they give that impression off. But I think that we have shown the last couple of 2 years, at least for long as I've been here, that we are a very difficult team to play against, especially when the opponent goes high and wants to create something. In my opinion, have one of the best attacks in Europe, and the guys that we have, they go forward really quick. So it might have given us opportunities, definitely. But again, it was a game that we took great part in, and still we lack the last percentages.
How do you assess the progress of the team with Lucien Favre? I think Lucien is a great manager. We've had him in France, so I know him really well. The job he did at Nice, and even before in Germany already, and etc., was fantastic. It's a very young team, and you're one of the oldest. And you know, you signed Emre Can, I think, in January to bring a bit of experience as well with you and other guys, because otherwise it's a very young squad. And you're getting really close to winning that title to go further in the Champions League. What was missing a bit? Apart from maybe the mentality, as you said, of having that winning confidence.
Well, the biggest obstacle is Bayern, for sure. You know, we've played two decent seasons. Last year was for the most part amazing, and yet we didn't clutch it. But honestly, it's difficult to say what lacks. When I talk about experience, it's not about age. It's about knowing how to win, and that only comes from winning, and we do that very well. I think that we've progressed this year in our defense. We've got Mats Hummels in. We now play with a whether you like to call it a three back three or back five, it doesn't matter. But we're stronger now defensively, and in the end, we all know that that makes that secures championships to defend good, and we've shown yet again that offensively we are in the top of Europe.
There's no question that in terms of depth of talent and options, you're up there. Part of me, though, feels like, and I know nobody likes to use injuries as excuses, and Bayern, obviously, you know, without Süle and whatnot, and Tolisso, I mean, they had injuries too. But there's a part of me that feels that you guys come back after this very long break. Surely we've seen different teams pick up muscular injuries. Maybe, just maybe, the fact that you had the same three guys, you know, having to start, that they started both, they started three games in a row up front, obviously Haaland, Brandt and Hazard. And I just wonder, you know, had he had the options that he should have in terms of a fully fit Marco Reus, a fully fit Jadon Sancho from the start, whether maybe he could have tried something different earlier, the circumstances could have been different. And in other words, did you maybe play Bayern at the wrong time, given the situation that you were in? And then also, I would also add Witzel, of course, in midfield as well.
Well, it's a difficult question. You know, we've all had the same basics to get in this season, which is a weird startup, long break. Before these three matches, I've played, three times 15 minutes, 11v11 in 6 months. So for me, it was a big step to go into to the Schalke game. But it's as a team-wise stress level, it's the same for every club. Maybe we've picked up a little bit more injuries than the other teams. And I'm sure, as you say, we've played with more or less the same team in three games because we don't have any more players. So sure, we could have been more fit. You know, none of the teams are fully fit. We could have had less injuries, but I'm not sitting here complaining about that.
No, I'm complaining for you.
Thank you.
So we're in the process here in England of, you know, the league coming back and players are going back to training. They did small groups. Now they're going to go back to full contact, etc. I know for you it's a long time ago already because Germany was so ahead of everybody else. But how was it for you? And do you understand why N'Golo Kante, for example, doesn't want to train now because he's a bit scared of the virus? Troy Deeney was a young baby at home, doesn't want to go back training. Do you understand? Did you have some fears as well, maybe before you went back training 2 months ago or whenever it was? And how was it to go back?
Sure, as you said, we started out very slowly. We at one moment we had a week off, started running at home, got bikes delivered, stuff like that. Then it was two and two together, four and four, six and six, and so on. But I think that Germany has done in general a very good job, including our town and our team in regards of being open about what's happening. And I don't feel like that in our squad there was any kind of fear towards getting infected. We get checked two times a week. But of course I respect, and I think in a period like this, you definitely should respect the fears and consequences that this can have to people and the family around them. So sure, I understand the whole Troy Deeney situation and N'Golo Kante. But as far as here, we are very, we more or less live in a quarantine when the season is on. You know, it's football, three games a week. So being in this mentality is difficult, but kind of like what we've seen before.
Yeah. A lot of people are talking about the effects of playing behind closed doors on the match and on the officiating. And I think there was possibly an example of this during the game with Boateng, the incident with his elbow. I was really struck by the fact that that it wasn't reviewed by VAR, which is fine, but it was also suggested to me that it wasn't reviewed because there was no big reaction from the crowd and no big reaction from the players on the pitch. Instead, you guys just got on with it quickly to take the corner. And it was suggested that, you know, maybe you didn't realize that the ball had come off his elbow and that maybe the referee could have had a different look. Can you tell me what you saw? Did you realize anything? Did you notice? Did you think it came off his back? And, you know, do you think having at a place like the Signal Iduna, having, you know, 80,000 people screaming might get the referee to say, hey, Cologne, is something going on? Should I look at this again or something?
Sure. First of all, I wasn't on the pitch when that happened. I was I went out in the halftime and was not out to see that live happening.
Did you see it at the time though? Because from the bench, did you have any idea what had happened?
No, I was still in. I took a shower, so I wasn't even out there. Okay. So it's very difficult for me to see how it was live. But definitely. In my opinion, it's a clear penalty, no question. And of course, there's a big, big difference, and that is the biggest difference at the moment compared to a normal game. That is the stress of the spectators, because 81,000 spectators at Signal Iduna, they're gonna break your ears when they're not happy, and everybody will know. And of course, that also projects to the referee that if something is seen as unfair or wrong, we will all quietly be heard. So sure, of course, there is a difference between how the players and the coach and the refs interact with the spectators, but also how we interact with the referees. We're talking a lot more to the referees, which is a good thing. We had a situation in the Wolfsburg game where the referee was very open about what he was talking to the VAR about. It was a handball again from Brooks. I don't know if it was a hand or anything, but he was very, very open about what he were asking the VAR. I remember the Wolfsburg players just started screaming at him because they thought it was like dumb for him to even talk to the VAR about it. And he was just like, all right, guys, I just shut my mouth. I won't talk to you about my decisions anymore. You're welcome. But this was the first time and we're not going down that road again. So for sure, there's a difference between how you can push your referee and the whole pressure from the spectators.
After the defeat on Tuesday, I mean, there's a gap between you and Bayern of 7 points. Leipzig yesterday not winning. They also have 7 points behind. What's the remaining of the season? Do you think you can still catch them? Do you think it'd be very hard now? And as you said, because they have that mentality that they're not going to drop 7 points between now and the end of the season, or it'd be very hard. So you need to fight for that second place. So where do you stand now?
We're not laying down. Of course, we have a position to maintain, first of all. And then we have to get as close to Bayern as possible. But sure, as you say, there's absolute no evidence that Bayern will lose 7 points in six games. Even though I would love it. Yeah. There's no sign of them doing that over the last many years. But it's a tight league. Not so tight in the top now that Bayern have gone in front. But we got many good teams around us that we have to deal with. So we're still on for fight in the league.
Okay. My last question for me, I don't want to bring back tough memories, but just as a footballer, just technically, I watched Kimmich's goal over a bunch of times, probably more than you. And it struck me that he doesn't look up after he gets the ball. You know, he takes two or three strides. He never looks to see where the goalkeeper is, and he just hits the ball. And can you just describe it technically? Hey, have you ever attempted something like that? Have you done stuff like that without looking? Do you just know, do you remember where he is and say, I hope he hasn't moved? Can you just walk me through technically what goes through you when you do something like that?
I don't make a lot of goals. So it's not like I have to dig very deep to remember my goals. But I had one in the Copenhagen Derby against Brøndby in the last minute where I kind of do the same, but more with a a curve in the corner, so a chip over the keyboard. And personally for me, when that happens, you pretty early on know what you're going to do. And I think Kimmich did as well, because it was a ping pong game in there. The ball was bouncing around. He didn't have any speed in the body to do any, much else. But I didn't see it coming. You know, it's very good players showing a very high level of skill, and you just gotta appreciate that at times like this. So I think that he very deliberate did it and saw the opportunity, but it wasn't written in the stars, because I didn't see it coming.
And last question for me as well, Tom. It's a double one quickly, because it's my last one. One on Jadon Sancho. How is it to train with him, and how far do you think he can go with the talent that he has? And the second one on Lucien Favre, because as I said before, I really like him and I hope he stays. I understand that there might be a question mark over, but what do you feel, and what kind of relationship you and maybe the dressing room has with him?
To start with Jadon, clearly one of the biggest talents I've played with. But with that talent comes a lot of pressure, and I think that he slowly starts to feel that from the England whole national team and clubs surrounding him now. And of course, it's an interesting time, because up to this point, he's been a talent, performing very well, performing over what a talent is expected to do. But there will always be a next step, and that's going to be interesting. Next step in the career, next step in development. But I don't see as a player, technical and physical, any limits for him. You know, he can get up there, but the question will be in his head and the effort he puts in, and of course, luck, injuries and stuff. Only looking at his skills, he definitely has what it takes to become one of the five biggest players in the world, and then all the things around is very difficult to see clear at this moment if it's enough, because you know you see big talents that go to waste. I would say he already did enough to prove himself. You know,
yeah.
He's 19 and you know he's. His most score points in the league together with Timo Werner and Lewandowski, and that's amazing. But you know, he should strive for more, because there's definitely room for that. And the next question with Lucien Favre. He's a great coach, first of all, and the team likes him. I think he fits Dortmund very well, because we learned last year that we are a team that performs best when we have fun, and when we just go out there and go like, let's see how many goals we can make.
Is he a bit like a school teacher? Because it feels like it feels like he's a bit like your teacher that you had at school, and that the thing that you learn with him is quite basic. But like you said, with a lot of fun. I mean, the way you beat the press in the first half hour against Bayern, I was amazed, because they were coming at you so strong and you were passing the ball like almost like on a PlayStation. It felt like you and Dahoud in midfield, and then Hakimi and Raphael on the sides, and it was just like bim, 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 bim. And does he feel to you like he's a bit like a school teacher?
Yeah, you can say that. Also in his appearance, his old school Swiss French approach. You know, he's guiding and shouting in French, so it's not always that I get what he's saying. But you know, when he says "Ouh la la, Thomas," then I know it's not good. but sure, you know, as far as I see it, he's very concerned about especially that part of the game, play out of the pressure, especially against Bayern, because they are definitely the best pressing side in Bundesliga. They put a big effort into that and makes it very difficult. And the way we do it is we train that a lot, playing out from the goalkeeper as well, because we have in modern football, the goalkeeper has a big role to play. You know, he has a lot of passes, a lot of long passes. And then when we get up in the final third, you know, where the magic is supposed to happen, his philosophy is kind of let the boys do what they're best at. And I'm not going to tell them when to do that and when to do that. It's very freely. And I think you see that in in how we play. You know, if you look at the first goal in Wolfsburg, you know, we have Rafael Guerrero standing in the central of the midfield. We have Julian Brandt, who plays left wing, standing on the right sideline. And we have Torgan, which is a right striker out there. And we have Hakimi in the deep, you know. So there's a lot going on when we're out there. We have a lot of players that don't care so much about how it looks from the back line. And you know, I have Mats standing behind me and shouting, like, what is happening here. But that's in the end, that's how we create good situation where we are one man more than the opponent, and that's kind of the offensive last third philosophy that we have.
So you're hoping that he will stay a bit longer. Sorry, Gab. Sorry.
Yeah, sure. You know, it's been a everything considered, my injuries and stuff, a great time for me. Last year, he had a big trust in me, and now here coming back for injury. So, you know, at the moment, I'm really, really happy to plan that.
So I did say last question. I want to sneak another one in.
He always does that, Tom. He always does that. It's the last question. There's always something.
Sorry, ESPN, we got to ask about Gio Reyna and Erling Haaland. But I'm struck, if you just talk a little bit about Reyna and Haaland, but also I'm just struck by the fact that these are two guys who both had dads who were outstanding international caliber footballers. I'm just wondering, I mean, you play with a lot of talented young footballers. Do you think that informs the way they train or the way they play, the fact that they've, you know, they basically from the time that, I don't know who was giving you advice when you were 8 years old, but from the time they were little boys, they kind of had the best of the best around them, advising them, helping them grow. Is that something that you see in the way that they train or the way that they've developed?
Kind of, you know, especially with Erling, I see a kid. I could call him a kid. You know, he is young.
He's twice your size, but yeah,
he's twice your size. Yes, a young man that does everything to improve. You know, this guy is annoying at sometimes because everything has to be, you know, on point and more training, eating better and stuff like that. So sure, I think that he's definitely benefited from having people around him, probably especially his dad, that knows how things are working in football. But on the other hand, you know, with both of them, it's not like they stand out in that regard, that having parents that are famous football players, I don't feel that in them in the way that, you know, they already are proven or comes from, you know, a good family in that regard. I think they're both very humble and, you know, taking crazy steps, both of them. Erling, of course, makes, I don't even have to mention the stats. And Gio as well, just coming in, American kid. Last year, traveled a lot back and forth, and suddenly, you know, coming in, still has his breakthrough to come, but definitely is a player that you should expect more from, because in training he's totally on level.
You're only 28, but when you arrive at training one day and you have Haaland and Sancho and Joe Reyna there, does it make you feel a bit older than like all those kids around you?
Definitely. Unfortunately, yes, I'm starting to feel old.
But Piszczek makes you feel young, right?
Yeah, Piszczek makes you feel young.
Then you haven't seen Piszczek without a shirt on because this guy is ripped. So he makes me feel old as well.
Thomas, thank you so much.
So much for coming.
Good time. Really, really kind. And best of luck going forward. All right, as wonderful as Delaney was, here's something even better. Here's some quick hits.
Let's go.
Oh, now, Jules, now, I thought that David Luiz had signed a two-year contract at Arsenal after moving last summer towards the end of the transfer window from Chelsea. But James Ollie and others are reporting that it was actually a one-year deal with another year option, and maybe he'll be gone by June 30th. I want to get your views on this. Would it would it be wise for Arsenal to just write off David Luiz?
No, I don't think so. I think they should keep him. Okay, I know he's made mistakes, and I know he sometimes makes mistakes, and he will make more mistakes. I can tell you that now.
You never have too many 30-year-old center backs, right?
No, it's not that. But I think he's been very important in the dressing room, for sure. You don't have to keep him and playing every single minute of every single game. You've got Saliba coming in from Saint-Etienne, who I think would be amazing in that team. You also have already a lot of other center backs in Socrates, in Mustafi, in Holding, in Chambers, in all of that. But I think you can look at selling Holding and Mustafi and others. But I think keeping Luiz would be a good idea, really, for the influence he had on younger players, for the harmony in the dressing room. He's really been very useful for that as well. And if I don't know, maybe you could go at the back three and he plays a sweeper and maybe he can be very valuable to you. You don't have to start him again, like we said, every single game. But I think he's important in that dressing room for sure.
I don't know. I think you always have to look at numbers. He's on very big wages for what he does. He's on starter wages. And I think the question is, how much do I expect him to play next year? Do I expect him to be a starter? Because if he's not a starter, then if he's just there to be a babysitter, then, maybe I get somebody else. The one thing that will change it, though, is the fact that we're in this weird June 30th situation, right? His contract, according to Ollie's story, expires on June 30th, which would suggest to me that if you don't renew his contract, and this, because, he's not going to say, I'll take a two-month extension just to please you. Of course not. So June 30th, his deal expires. All of a sudden, are you going to be shorthanded between now and the end of the season if you want to try to get into Europa League or Champions League place? Or have Arsenal given that up? Would they just look at the table and say, look, we're ninth.
No, I've got a question.
We don't need this dude.
Arteta wants a ball-playing centre-back. Who's your best ball-playing centre-back in the Arsenal squad? Who can pass the ball? Who can do a diagonal 50 yards? Who is good with the ball as a centre-back?
Well, obviously, he's probably the best one out of the
Thank
lot.
You. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
So that means he's going to start.
No, I'm just saying thank you. No, thank you.
No, but right. You agree that if he's not going to be a starter next year, you're just keeping him around between now and in August to finish the season when you really don't have that much to play for.
Right. Gab, I can't let another show go by without asking you about Lautaro Martinez and Barcelona. I mean, I wonder for how long more. I mean, please just do something. I don't know. But Inter sporting director Piero Ausilio was quite clear on the subject, wasn't he?
Yeah, and this is the only reason I'm bringing Lautaro up again, because we have some definitive news. Piero Ausilio came out on Sky Italia and said, look, we are not selling Lautaro Martinez. He has a clause. He has a clause that has an end date. I believe it's July 15th. Could be wrong, but I think it is July 15th. If you want him, show up with the money, convince him to join you, and you can take him away. If not, he's not going anywhere. So all this nonsense, like I said, let me roll up. Let's see. What bad players do we have here that we can dump on Inter to go with the other ones? Maybe we can package Vidal, Rakitic, Braithwaite.
Abidal can come out of retirement.
Yeah, you can send
left back.
I mean, Valverde, I'm sure, is still under contract. You can send Valverde over too. I mean, come on now. I mean, look, we'll see if he's true to his word. But I think he knows full well that either Lautaro Martinez tantrums and says, no, I want to go, or Barcelona have to come up with money in double quick.
Last summer.
Don't think they can do that.
Last summer, it was Neymar and PSG. PSG said they were like carpet sellers. They were coming back and saying, okay, what about Ricky Puig? What about, with money for Neymar? And they're like, this is not how you do business. It's like, there's a price. You pay. You can afford it. You pay. You get it. If you go and buy a car and you go to the guy, hang on. I can give you one of my son's bike. I can give you a moped and my old car. And then and I buy your car for 30,000 pounds. The guy said, like, get out of the door. Like, who Barcelona think they are?
Why are you dissing your boy, Abidal? Is he not a Paris boy?
Where's Abidal? No, he's not a Paris boy.
Ah, that's why. It all comes out. He's always,
exactly. Yeah, come on, man. Be serious now.
Now, Jules, on Monday, we talked about Odion Ighalo and how his loan was coming to an end and Shanghai Shenhua wanted him back. But, of course, nobody, including us, seemed to mention that China has closed their borders for foreigners. So the dude apparently physically can't come back.
He can't come back. There's a big contract waiting for him there. But right now, it's like, okay, he can take the plane maybe and sleep at the airport in Shanghai and just wait.
He can live in the terminal for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, you know, like Tom Hanks. Yeah. I don't know. No, I mean, more seriously, this is an incredible situation that you pointed out weeks ago by saying, wait a minute, there could be a lot of issues there for some players, for some clubs, after June 30th and with contract and this and that. And we're exactly in it where Ighalo himself doesn't know what to do. And this is like, can I go back? I want to go back. There's a big contract for me. Shanghai is saying, hang on, we have a season now to play. We need it for that season. We can't just let him at United for two more months, I guess.
I mean, look, I'm not an expert on Chinese immigration, emergency immigration law due to the pandemic, but I would assume that if you're the Chinese Super League, I'm going to go out on a limb and suggest that when things got really bad in China, most of these foreign players left. They didn't stick around, right? So they all are going to be facing the same problem of having to get back into China. Mm-hmm. There's no point in starting Chinese Super League without all your foreign stars and commercially. So I'm sure there'll be some – I think there's parts of the story that we don't know. I'm sure there's some arrangement that they can come to.
More bad news for Milan as Zlatan Ibrahimovic goes down injured. But Gab, he looks less serious than we first thought or anticipated.
Yeah, it's looking like it's, you know, you're looking about maybe 3-4 weeks. They've basically said, hey, why don't you go home and spend some time off, and say, no, it's not like, you know, Zlatan will continue to train and stay fit. It's a weird one because set against the background to this is, of course, is his expiring contract. I would be very surprised if Milan extend him at this stage. Now, maybe he comes back, scores a goal a game, gets into the Champions League, and then it's a different situation. But I think, you know, the Zlatan experience has been positive. He's been important for the team. But this is a team that – I know they say they rebuild every year, but now – if they do change managers, if they do move for Rangnick or somebody like that, then it really will be a rebuild. And Zlatan is a last piece of the puzzle kind of guy. He's not a rebuild guy. Now, I love the job Julian Nagelsmann is doing at Leipzig, but Jules, that choo-choo draw with Hertha was a real stinker.
That was bad. I mean, I didn't expect Hertha to play that well. I have to be honest. I didn't think Hertha could take their game to that kind of level, really, because I thought they were outstanding on the night, despite even the big mistake by the goalkeeper on the shit goal. But I don't know, from Leipzig, I don't know, it was an off day. I thought I was not even convinced by Nagelsmann's tactics changes.
What about Matthias Cunha, man? Like,
I know, great
getting
story.
Getting his revenge?
Yeah, of a player, Cunha, Leipzig, who didn't play much, left in January to go to Hertha. Especially since the Bundesliga came back, he's been outstanding, not just in this game, but in the previous game as well. And great talent. Sometimes, you know, a different choice, you move another manager, different style of play, different formation as well. And people trust you. They have confidence in you, faith in you, which was not the case in Leipzig. And then that's how you flourish. But for Leipzig, we've said before, oh, they create a law and it's not worrying and stuff like that. They can't have too many games like that, though, because otherwise the end of the season would be tough. And Nagelsmann was really unhappy after the game.
Well, they created a lot less. And I think they also...
I don't know. It was
they didn't look as sharp as they did before. And I think it was unhappy, too. Just, I mean, much as I love my Ademola Lookman. And obviously, you could see what he's doing. He was, you know, rotating guys in and stuff because, you know, playing for Leipzig is physically very punishing.
Yeah.
But that was so bad, the penalty he gave away. I mean, come on, man. Come on.
I know Peter Bosz is another of your favorites, Gab. And we talked a lot about him on Monday with Jan Agafjotov as well. But do you feel vindicated now after Bayer Leverkusen were destroyed by Wolfsburg 4-1 in a game that could have easily been 7-1 even?
As I've said many times, I don't understand this dude at all. And yeah, when you have Kai Havertz and you got some young players and they have a lot of depth and you chuck everybody forward. But some of those defensive rotations, the way they set up, it was almost as if like, oh, well, don't worry. We'll just have 98% possession and Wolfsburg will never cross the halfway line. So I don't understand. I don't understand if they work on defensive pressures, how they do it, if I mean, it was, you just saw the worst of Peter Bosz. And I think, you know, this is such a feast or famine coach, and you get excited to win a couple games and then all of a sudden, you know, the bottom falls out again.
But even his replacement at half times, I mean, he put Arangis as center back in a back three, and I'm like, what are you doing? It made no sense to me whatsoever.
Now, I wasn't going to ask Thomas Delaney about this for obvious reasons. You sort of asked him a bit about Lucien Favre, but it's pretty obvious his future is in doubt because Dortmund spent a ton of money on Hummels and on Emre Can. You know, they came out, they said clearly, Vatska said, we are gunning for the title, and they're not going to win the title, most likely. They're going to finish a bazillion points behind Bayern again. And now, but what I loved here is Lothar Matthäus has come out and he said that, Niko Kovac is on his way to replace Lucien Favre. Lucien Favre apparently got extremely annoyed at this. Is this just trolling? And yet, I'm suspecting it might be trolling because, hey, look, let me get Niko freaking Kovac to go
and replace. I'm telling you, if Kovac replaces Lucien, I'm out. I quit. I quit football forever. I go and do netball or softball or whatever. I don't care. There's no way that someone like Michel Zorc or whoever, Vasco, I don't care, but who can tell me, let's have a good idea. Let's go and get Niko Kovac and replace Lucien Favre by Kovac. I mean, if they do that, this is it for me. This is it. Because, Favre has some flaws and maybe the lack of winning mentality and I get it. I get it. And certainly last season when they were, 9 points clear with 2 months left in the season, they should have won the league more than this year, I think. But let's not forget that this Bayern team is ruthless. You know, and Thomas Delaney explained it well. You talked about it a lot. Jan Agger talked about it a lot as well. It's not easy to go and beat this Bayern team over 34 games in a season, to be that consistent, that strong all the way through the season. So I think they could cut a bit of slack to Favre because I think he's an amazing manager. Clearly, I think some of the players like him, maybe not everyone, but to go and find someone better than him, that is not Nagelsmann or Flick who? Go on, who? What, your mate Allegri? Who can they go now that is better than Favre?
Oh my God, that's such like the English ex-pro argument. Who are you going to get is better?
It's a very good question.
I will tell you. 12 months ago, would you have included Hansi Flick in somebody who was better than these guys?
No. Answer my question. Who right now they could go and get? Realistically, no, tell me Guardiola or Klopp or this and that. Go on.
It's Germany, right? It's Germany. This is the country where they take people who nobody's ever heard of, they stick them into the team at 30. Who had heard of Nagelsmann before Nagelsmann?
Okay.
I don't have a problem with them moving on from Favre. I would have a problem if they went for Kovac.
Give me a name. Give me a name. What? Tedesco or I just saying to you, it will not be easy if they're not happy with Favre and they sack him. Good on them. It just won't be easy, really, to find someone of that caliber this summer. That's all I'm saying. They can do whatever they want, but
of Lucien Favre's caliber. Come on,
Lucien Favre is a very, very good manager.
Sir Alex Ferguson, there. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
I think after a while you get a little stale.
Yeah. The Newcastle United takeover by a Saudi-led consortium was supposed to be approved within 30 days, Gavin. That was maybe like 120 days ago. It's been 2 months, and now the World Trade Organization is getting involved. This is not good, right?
No, this isn't good. Basically, obviously, there's a lot of opposition to it from different quarters. There's the fact that the guy who owns Sheffield United is also Saudi. In fact, he's a cousin of the Saudi ruler or the de facto Saudi ruler, the Crown Prince MBS. There's obviously concerns about human rights violations. But there's also, since money talks, this whole issue with BLQ and pirating beIN Sports signal, the fact that the Premier League had filed a legal complaint against the Saudi government, the fact that the Saudi government said all along, well, we've got nothing to do with BLQ, they're just some pirate broadcaster. The WTO, now they're going to issue the ruling next month, but they've come out, it's been leaked that they said, Saudi, you are running BLQ. The first they said, no, it's a BLQ. They're from Cuba. They're from Colombia. But weirdly, they sell all their boxes in Saudi Arabia. And these are all things that they probably should have thought through before. And what really doesn't add up to me on this level is why these guys are getting involved on a state level, because it is a Saudi sovereign fund. This dude's got billions, right?
Yeah.
If you want to be involved, do it on a personal level. Say, no, look, I'm gonna use my money to finance a deal. I'm not gonna go, because to him, it's not enormous amounts of money. We're talking about a couple hundred million, right?
Yeah.
Use your personal wealth. Don't use the country's wealth. And a lot of these problems, I think, would go away.
Yeah. Or give us the money and we sort it out. You know, we can rent that club. We can buy it. No need of Amanda or, you know, her pals. I mean, I would love you to be Newcastle United CEO. You would do a great job there.
Yeah, I have to brush up on my Geordie, but why not? Jeremy Boga will not be coming back to Chelsea, and after the standout year he's had at Sassuolo, there's talk with Juventus. Jules, your thoughts?
Well, he had a wonderful season, probably one of the best wingers in Serie A before we went on to this break. And I think Sassuolo have been, one, very clever to take a gamble on him and give him his chance, and then to sign him permanently. There's talk about between 10 and 15 million euros, which I think is a very good value for him. And now they can keep him maybe another year, or they can sell him on. And I don't know. I think Chelsea could have used him maybe. I would have loved him to see. I would have loved to see him back at Chelsea, to be fair.
But you can see the argument. They have so many wingers at Chelsea, you know.
But Pedro and Willian are going, right? So
no, I know. But you've got Ziyech. You still have Mount. You've got Hudson-Odoi. You've got Pulisic.
Yeah. But he's your player as well. You know, you could have him back for nothing. With that year of experience in Serie A, clearly the confidence is high for him. Maybe he could have had an impact. Now Sassuolo, who we know is a feeder club for Juventus, you know, maybe
they don't like it when people say that.
No, but you know it's the truth, right? Yeah. You know it's the truth. It's deja vu with Mario Balotelli, Gab. What's going on now?
So it looks like his time at Brescia might be coming to a premature end.
What a surprise!
And shock horror.
Shock horror.
He hasn't appeared interested in training. He missed training entirely. Then he sent a doctor's note saying that, you know, he had a tummy bug. The doctor apparently did visit him. It was also the day that he was supposed to be tested for coronavirus. And he joked that, you know, he doesn't like things up his nose. it's, you know, but there's also the reality that, to look at it from Mario's side, you know, Brescia are one of the two bottom teams in Serie A. And, you know, why would you want to come back? It's the summer. There's other stuff to do. It's a messy one. And, you know, the sad thing about Balotelli is the guy turns 30 in August. It's like, it feels like his career has gone in a blink of an eye. And, you know, a lot of the stuff that people excused when he was younger and put it down to his character and difficulty, whatever, you know, at some point, you know, people mature if they want to be professional footballers.
What do you think could be next for him now? What, like, surely in Serie A, that's him done. In the whole of Europe, there's where could he go?
There's a very romantic story linking him to Brazil. Go to
oh my god!
To go to, it would have to be Botafogo or Flamengo, where I think Jorge Jesus is sticking around.
Yeah.
But you know, he loves Brazil. He likes Brazil, and it would have to be Rio, Sao Paulo, too much traffic, you know, no beach.
No, he needs the beach, yeah.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
Oh, my God. It would be great.
All right, Jules, here we go. It's that time of the show when we do our Alphabet 11, brought to you by the letter T.
The letter T, indeed, Gab. Thank you again for all your teams, all your messages, etc. We've picked a few. Graham Off, something like that. 4-3-3 formation, Ter Stegen in goal, which I think would be a very popular choice. Trippier, Tah, Pau Torres, and Tierney at the back. Tolisso, Tadic, Torreira in midfield, and then Cristian Tello, Carlos Tevez, and Ferran Torres up front. David Urihan has a 4-2-3-1. Ter Stegen again in goal. Tanganga, Toprak, Tomori, Tagliafico at the back. Tuzar and Tolisso in a all-French defensive midfield partnership. Tadic, Trincao, Tovin, and Traore up front. I mean, there were so many options. Craig Munro, do you remember, who did a double S team, tried his leg in a double T team. He was short on goalkeeper, but the rest is pretty impressive.
Put Thomas Tuchel in goal.
Let's go with Thomas Tuchel in goal. Then Takehiro Tomiyasu from Bologna at the back. Tommy Thompson from San Jose, Terrell Thomas from Wimbledon, and Thomas Tavares from Benfica. At the back, Taijo Teniste and Taleb Tawata from Ludogorets there as well. Tom Tribal from Norwich, Tanner Tessman from Dallas, Thomas Touré from Angers, and Titian Tucci from Basel in the team. Pretty impressive double T. Who else do we
that
have?
Is impressive.
Do you want an all Traoré team? Maybe.
Ooh.
We have two. Ibes 16 sent Moussa Traoré in goal. Charles, Ismael, and Amari at the back. Ibrahim, Drissa, Adama Traoré, Bertrand in midfield. And then a front three of Eric Traoré, Adama from Wolves, and Amidou Traoré from Demirspor. We also had another Traoré team, thanks to Atava Besen, who had Alou in goal, Amari, Ibrahim, Ismail, and Charles from Nantes at the back. Adama Traoré, Hamed Traoré from Sassuolo, and Ibrahima Traoré from Borussia Mönchengladbach in midfield. And then Adama, Lassina Traoré, and Bertrand Traoré up front as well.
Lassina Traoré still plays? That guy was like the size of a building.
That's another Hamed... Lassina Traoré. That's the one from Ajax.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And Hamed Traoré, by the way, very, very good player.
Very, very good prospect, yes. What about Sophie? Do you have Sophie's team?
Of course, the ladies' teams.
And let's go.
She has Ainhoa Tirapu in goal. At the back, Tamires, Aissatou Tsounkara, Tyla. Oh, somebody I've heard of. Marta Torrejón. And then Sanne Trollsgaard. Then Berglund, Bjorg, Horvald's daughter, yeah. Regina Torricilia, and Amelie Testrup. And then up front, Mina Tanaka and Martha Thomas.
Wow, that's good. Do you want to hear Miguel Galan's team?
Of course, the head-to-head continues.
Yes, and Miguel, I love you because you've done the all-French women 11 starting with T, which I think is amazing. I mean, I didn't even know that you could do that. But you have. We've got Manon Totti in goal from Guingamp, Marion Torrent, Aissatou Tsounkara, Alexia Trevisan and Julie Thibault at the back. In midfield, we've got Tandia, Toletti and Troussard. And then up front, Tarieux, Lindsay Thomas from Roma, actually, and Gaëtan Tine from Paris FC. So well done. Well done, Miguel. That was pretty impressive. What about yours, Gab? What's your team?
Well, mine's free and easy. I had to go with a German goalkeeper, sorry. So it's Marc-André Ter Stegen in goal. At the back, Kieran Trippier, unless he gets banned, of course. Rafael Toloi,
yes.
My man Fikayo Tomori, the Chelsea speedster.
Of course.
And at left back, Kieran, no, just kidding, of course. Nicolas Tagliafico, obviously, at left back. Come on, man. Midfield, I have Sandro Tonali from Brescia, who deserves more than a mention, with Yuri Tielemans and Manu Trigueros from Villarreal. And up front, it's Adama Traoré, obviously. Marcus Thuram and Ferran Torres.
Nice.
And that
that's
is a talented young front three. So take that.
That's a very good team. I mean, the T, we had so many options again. I decided to go for an all Touré 11. That doesn't include either Yaya or Kolo.
Yeah,
I mean, Kolo, we know, is retired. But Yaya, you know, there was him linked with Vasco da Gama very recently. So, you know, maybe he still needed a team.
I think Kolo Touré is relaxing at home right now.
Yeah, probably. So this is my team. In goal, I've got Moussa Touré, who used to play with me when we were kids. So that counts. I don't care what you said. I've got Almani, right back from Frankfurt. Zargo Touré, who plays in Turkey. Baba Touré, who plays in the French third division. Fode Touré, for the Ballo Touré at Monaco. I've got Ibrahim Touré from Guimarães. I've got Abdoulaye Touré from Nantes. I've got Birama Touré from Auxerre. And then my front three is Thomas Touré, El Bilal Touré from Reims, and Malik Touré, who plays in Algeria as Sétif. This is my old Touré 11.
That is impressive. Can we make Kolo Touré the manager, though?
Yeah, Kolo Touré the manager, yeah. And Yaya as the, like, sort of, you know, manager, head coach, president, you know. Like,
club
like
chairman, I think, is the word you're looking for. All right, that brings it to an end. You guys out there, please stay safe and stay alert.
And we see you on Monday with the U team.
Monday it is.